Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. One day away from the Tennessee Volunteers kicking things off in the 2022 season. They'll take on Ball State coming up tomorrow at Neyland Stadium. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Ben McKee from GoVols 24/7. Ben, first off, welcome to the show. Congratulations on the move over to 24/7.
Thank you very much. Appreciate y'all having me on. Hope all is well on y'all's end, and thanks for the congratulations.
Yeah, so, we like to give Wes a lot of crap, for people who don't know, in the press box at Vols. So, do you give him more or less crap now?
Well, that is a very interesting question, because now when I pick on him, obviously I have to deal with the ramifications more, I would think, just because I have to deal with him, because typically I can just kind of rip him and I don't have to deal with him after that. But now I have to work with
him. Now you got a podcast with him.
Yeah.
Yes, and we all know Wes likes to talk, so that could go either way. So I don't know. I'm going to have to kind of feel that one out.
Yeah, it's going to be a process to figure out how that one goes. So, Ben, as Tennessee takes on Ball State tomorrow, what's the number one thing you're looking for? If you're a Tennessee fan in this game, I mean, you're hoping it's not all that competitive of a game, but what's the number one thing you're looking for as Tennessee lines up tomorrow against Ball State?
Yeah, I mean, for the diehard followers, I mean, I think there are individual position battles that you're kind of keeping an eye on, and there's quite a few of those, and I can get into those if y'all want, but kind of the bigger thing that I'm looking at is more so in regards to Pittsburgh week two and kind of how the play tomorrow night against Ball State could potentially translate to that game at Pittsburgh, because I think that Pittsburgh game is just so important and can really swing the season one way or another. Not necessarily in the sense of Tennessee is going to have a terrible season if they lose to Pittsburgh, but I think that if they can go on the road and beat the defending ACC Coastal champs, then I think that's a sign of great things to come, and then they could potentially live up to the hype of 9 wins, and maybe if just absolutely everything goes perfect, maybe a 10-win season, and maybe that 10-win comes in a bowl game. Who knows? But looking forward to that Pittsburgh game, I think fans would want to see Tennessee's offensive line push around a Ball State defensive front. I think that would make them feel better about the Pittsburgh game and about the Florida game later in the month of September as well. Pittsburgh has several veteran, talented defensive linemen that I think will prove to be the difference in the game. Whoever wins that matchup, I think will win the football game. So seeing Tennessee's offensive line have success against Ball State the way they should, I think would be a great indicator. So that's something I'm watching. And I'm also kind of keeping up with Tennessee's secondary as well. They were not very good last year, and they will be challenged there in week two. You've obviously have a very talented quarterback that is starting for Pittsburgh and Keaton Slovis. I think fans kind of forget how naturally talented he is, and they have some interesting transfers that they added over the offseason from Louisiana Tech and from Akron that have kind of turned some heads in fall camp. So seeing Tennessee secondary perform the way that they should against the talent level of a Ball State, which has some interesting receivers, experienced receivers in Jayshon Jackson, Yohines Tyler, Amir Abdul-Rahim, who was there at Vanderbilt there a couple of years ago. I think keeping them in check would also be a good sign when you look ahead to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, man, Maxson's got some receivers.
Yeah, they do.
You can count on some of that. Well, I do want to get a little bit in that depth chart, Ben. And, you know, it's loaded with oars, like a lot of depth charts are starting out a season. And some of those oars, I don't really, like, you know, like the defensive line, they're going to rotate those guys, figure that out. I don't really buy Mitchell or Beasley, but you tell me if I'm wrong on that one. Or like Brew McCoy, Walker Barron. I think Brew McCoy is going to be, you know, a really good player for this team this year. But or like tight end too, right? Those guys are both going to play a lot. But I look at Gerald Mincy, Jeremiah Crawford at left tackle. I'd love to know what you think of that. And you mentioned the secondary, Christian Charles or Kamal Haddon at corner. I'm kind of big on Christian Charles as maybe a guy who could really emerge. What do you think about those two situations in particular?
Yes, I'm with you on Christian Charles. I think he's a guy that can really have a breakout season, not in the sense of maybe an All-SEC caliber season, but just a really nice season. He's had a nice fall camp, and I think that would be the biggest surprise for me on the depth chart. Well, the second biggest one behind Brandon Turnage not necessarily being in the two deep. Mm. That was a surprise to me. He'll play a good bit on Thursday night, I would think. I just also kind of think he is in limbo, because is he a corner? Is he a safety? Is he the star nickel? I think that may be why you don't see him in the two deep, is because I think he's pretty solid at a couple of different spots, but can he be good or great at one spot? So that was the surprise to me. The other one was the fact that it's Christian Charles or Kamal Haddon, and not the other way around, with Warren Burrell being one of the oars. I thought Warren Burrell would be one of the oars, because I think Christian Charles and Kamal Haddon will be Tennessee's two best corners. Maybe not opening night, but I think that they will prove to be Tennessee's two best corners. So I'm with you on your thinking there with Christian Charles. And I also think that's kind of the same situation that they have over at left tackle, to where both of those guys are just going to play a lot in the opener. They're going to rotate, and you know, whoever has the better performance is probably going to be the starter going into Pittsburgh, and is probably going to play more in that Pittsburgh game. Gerald Mincy and Jeremiah Crawford are pretty equal in my mind. I think they both have had pretty solid camps. I think Tennessee is comfortable enough with them to where they were able to keep Darnell Wright at right tackle. But still trying to see just how good Mincy and Crawford can be. And, again, I think that's been pretty neck and neck. And whoever has the better night on Thursday will be the guy moving forward, obviously. And that's a real key position, because it is protecting Hendon Hooker's blind side.
Ben McKee from GoVols 24/7 on with us here on Robbie and Rexroad. So, Ben, we've talked a lot here on the show about Brew McCoy and Jalen Hyatt and obviously Cedric Tillman. Beyond those three at wide receiver, which guy maybe intrigues you the most in terms of the role that they could have at wide receiver for this team this year?
Yeah, I think it is Walker Merrill. You mentioned him a moment ago. I think Walker is going to play quite a bit, especially if he can be productive early on. He's had a really nice offseason, has had a nice fall camp. I think he is that fourth receiver. And in this offense, there is nothing wrong with being that fourth receiver. I think you're still going to play quite a bit, and you're going to be able to catch quite a few passes as well. And I think it's really key for him to emerge for the depth of that wide receiver room. They don't trust Jimmy Callaway. He has all the talent in the world, but it's just pretty inconsistent day to day, off the field, on the field. And then Ramel Keaton, he's been there a while. Quite frankly, I just don't know that he's an SEC caliber wide receiver, and he's more so in the two deep just because of a lack of bodies. And then after that, you kind of have a bunch of freshmen outside of Jimmy Holiday. And Jimmy Holiday is also intriguing. I would put Jimmy Holiday in that same boat as Walker Merrill, although I do think Walker is slightly ahead of Jimmy Holiday. But I think those two guys, if they can step up, which they have had good fall camps, I think that would be huge for the wide receiver depth. And they can have quite the role in that wide receiver room, I think, because they can play inside and they can play outside. Jimmy Holiday is going to be the kick returner, so you know that he can do some things with the ball in his hands. And again, I think Walker Merrill is very versatile. So I'm looking at those two guys, and then Squirrel White. He's turned heads as well because of his speed. The freshman from Alabama. That is one that would be fascinating if he could carve out a role, because if you can add kind of a second Jalen Hyatt in terms of speed on offense, that's just giving another weapon for Josh Heupel or Hendon Hooker to play with.
So, Ben, back on the secondary, I think probably the most consistently praised guys probably are Flowers and McCullough, right, going back to the spring. I mean, I think they feel really good about those guys. But I was very interested in the star position. I don't know, I guess I kind of thought maybe Danico Slaughter would be the guy, but Tamarion McDonald is the starting star. I know they're going to move those guys around. They want to be interchangeable, and I think that's a nice thing to have if you can do that. But what about him in particular? How do you feel about him if he's that guy this year? That was such a huge position for this defense, of course, last year with Theo Jackson.
Right. Tamir and McDonald, I would put in that same conversation with Jalen McCullough and Trayvon Flowers that you mentioned. That have just kind of been Mr. Consistent and really received a lot of praise from the coaches this offseason. With McCullough and Flowers, we'll see. I'm in believe it when I see it mode with them, just because they are veterans and have been here for quite some time. And McCullough needed to slim down, which he did. And hopefully that will help with his athleticism and his speed and allow him to be better in pursuit and tackling and all those fun things. And Flowers is pretty athletic and just hasn't really been able to piece it together. So we'll see what they can do. But Tamarion McDonald is younger than those two. Josh Heupel said the other day that he's been as consistent as anybody on the entire roster. And I think that's why you've seen him be able to beat out guys for that star position, especially Wesley Walker, the transfer from Georgia Tech, who has played quite a bit of football. So T-Mac, as they call him, has had just a really, really nice offseason, as great of an offseason as anybody on the team, and that's why he is slotted as the starting star, a.k.a. the nickel. And everybody over there on campus feels like he's poised for a big season.
Ben McKee from GoVars 24/7, our guest here on Robbie and Rexford. Ben, great stuff, man. Looking forward to kickoff tomorrow, and thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, guys, have a great weekend.
Absolutely, you as well. Ben McKee, our guest here on Robbie and Rexford. We'll continue the discussion on the Vols. Look ahead to the game tomorrow against Ball State. What are we most excited to see about this Tennessee team as they open up their 2022 season? We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rexford, 102.5, 106.3, the game. This September 10th and 11th, the Chainsmokers hit Music City at the Blended Wine and Music Festival. 24 bands, 2 stages, 1 weekend, all under the Nashville skyline. Buy your tickets now at blendedfestival.com. Once again, that's blendedfestival.com. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Ben McKee for joining us in the last segment. We'll have Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee coming up here in about 15 minutes at 7:30 as well. So looking forward to that. It is game day tomorrow for Tennessee as they take on Ball State at Neyland Stadium. They're about a 35-point favorite in this game, Joe Rexroad. So not a game that many people expect to be close. You're hoping, if you're a Tennessee fan, it's not close in this game. But as you sit here today, we know what the expectations for this offense are. I think we know what a lot of the question marks are on the defensive side of the ball for this team. What intrigues you the most about Tennessee as they take on Ball State coming up tomorrow at Neyland Stadium?
Well, you want to see the offense just be, in rhythm quickly, and just like you want that first possession to just boom, 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 touchdown. That's what it should be. So I'm interested in individuals, like Ben said there, up front. That's a huge deal going into Kalijah Cansey and all those guys for Pittsburgh. You know, the interior of that line is going to be, in particular, going to be really tested. I like what they have there with Carvin, Mays, Spraggins. I think that could be a really nice interior trio. You're looking at left tackle, looking at some of the youngs who has how ready is Brew McCoy. You know, Jalen Hyatt, has all the hype been justified with him? But I think I still might be more interested in the defense because it's just the bigger question by far. I mean, if the offense isn't really good this year, really productive in most weeks, that'll be very surprising. I do not expect that at all. I think the offense can be very good. They'll figure out left tackle. Obviously, that's big. You need to do better to figure out. You need one of those guys to emerge and play well. But defensively, a lot of questions. Like Ben said, and I've been working on a story on Trey Flowers.
At theathletic.com.
Yes, that's right. It'll run tomorrow. But he's right. Like those guys have been praised left and right, and certainly leadership, big part of it. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. But as players, I mean, last year they gave up 42% on third down. I mean, that was 101st in the country. It was 13th in the SEC.
Not good.
And those guys were, running, chasing people plenty on big plays. So how much better can they be as players? Is McDonald going to be a big add? It's just a huge loss. Theo Jackson was great last year. And the defensive front, a lot of possibilities up there. I like Byron Young and Tyler Barron, but, Amari Thomas, Elijah Simmons, Bryson Eason, these guys, Garland, are they going to miss Butler and Blakely and those guys? And that was, again, on a defense that was surprisingly good and set the school record with tackles for loss, but also still, gave up 41 points a game to the six best teams on the schedule.
Yeah, it was not a good defense. Like, they overachieved in certain spots.
They made plays.
And they made some plays, but overall it's not a good defense. And that, to me, there's a question that I think is kind of always going to be there with Josh Heupel to a certain degree, and that is the style of play offensively that you want to have, which is quick, go, 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 is that conducive to playing good defense? Now, a little bit of this is college football in general. There are Alabama cornerbacks getting beat left and right last year too at times, and I'm just like, is Alabama not playing good defense? Like, what's going on out there? Like, Georgia was great, obviously. They're great defense last year, but the days of your lockdown, shutdown defense in the SEC, like that used to be what the SEC was about, the line of scrimmage, and could you play some defense?
16-13
yeah,
games.
Like, it's
right. Running the ball.
It's not really that way anymore. So, I don't ever expect the defense to be, as dominant as Georgia's was last year, but I am interested to see, the line of scrimmage tomorrow on both sides of the ball, Tennessee ought to dominate. Like, the defensive line ought to get some push. They shouldn't allow, Ball State to run the ball all over them. Like, you need to have the physical advantage tomorrow where both lines of scrimmage, you're just absolutely destroying Ball State. Now, how's that going to translate to Pittsburgh? I have no clue because it's a much different challenge as they head into week two. But if both lines of scrimmage tomorrow don't dominate, that would be pretty concerning for a Tennessee fan.
Well, if you think back to last year against Bowling Green, so it was Cooper, right? Cooper Mays got hurt.
Yep.
And the first couple series, it was like, yep, everything you want to see. And then really, the protection was got thrown pretty badly after he left. Now, eventually, they just kind of ran the ball. But it wasn't all that impressive, an opener. On that side of the ball, in terms of the offensive line, they obviously got to stay healthy. But I agree, you want to dominate, and last year it was like, what is Joe Milton going to be? And really, he wasn't all that good after the start of that game. I mean, you know what Hendon Hooker is now, but yeah, you want to dominate for sure up front, and you got to find guys who can be difference makers against better teams. I do like how it sets up because you get that extra time too. You get Thursday night, you get a little bit of extra time to evaluate yourself, who you're going with moving forward, and then you can watch. I don't even know who Pittsburgh plays.
Well, I think they play tomorrow too.
Is that right?
I think. Okay. Let me double check on that.
So they got the extra time too, so I guess there's no advantage. But I think it's still good. Both sides probably like that.
Yeah, they play West Virginia tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. The old rivalry renewed.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? Another thing, by the way, we need to have friend of the show, Pat Narduzzi.
Yeah, we do.
Next week, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Text him right now.
Get him in there.
I'm right now.
One thing that is going to be crucial to me, because whether it be injury or elsewhere, is there a receiver or two beyond Brew McCoy, Jalin Hyatt, and obviously Cedric Tillman that could come in and be reliable for Tennessee? There's a lot of guys that have talent that you feel okay about their ability. Like Jimmy Callaway, I feel good. Like when he gets the ball in his hands, I feel good about Jimmy Callaway. You know, it's putting everything else together to get on the field to put yourself in a position to do that. That seems to have been a struggle for him. But whether it's Holiday or Walker Merrill, or can some freshmen step up? You know, Ramel Keaton, can he be a part of it? Like, they've got some guys beyond those three at wide receiver that have some ability. Can any of those guys step up and be reliable? Because, number one, it'd be nice to have somewhat of a rotation if you're Tennessee at wide receiver. And number two, like the odds of nobody getting hurt the whole year at wide receiver are pretty low. So you need to have some depth there as well. I'm interested to see, as the season goes on, is there a guy or two that can step up and be a reliable part of that receiving corps beyond those three?
Yeah, the Callaway stuff's interesting because there was a lot of talk, Hyatt and Callaway, and how much work they put in. It seems like Hyatt, that's going to pay off for him. Like, you're going to see him out there a lot. But Callaway, you know, something's not totally connecting there. And Callaway and Holiday both are fun to watch with the ball in their hands. I think, like Ben said, Walker Merrill, probably the next guy. And then, like, Squirrel White, we all hope for the sake of, you know, just being able to say Squirrel White more often, that he has a role. But you know,
I need a Squirrel White, Jazz Nimrod package at some point.
Nimrod, not on the depth chart.
Yeah, I know.
But they, I hear you on depth. Someone could get hurt. You want to do that. But I think Tillman, Hyatt, McCoy, if those guys are all good and healthy, that could be a really good trio. And you may not need a ton more than that. Mix in somebody here and there. I mean, I'm kind of with Ben on Ramel Keaton, just a guy. He's been around. That would be, if someone gets hurt, you probably feel like you can plug him in and he can do the job. But those other three guys, those top three guys, I think could all be, you know, really good players. And like I said, Tillman and McCoy, 6'3", 220, 6'3", 215. Guys are big physical receivers out there.
Got some size and the speed that Jalin Hyatt brings to the table. You know, you didn't get a chance to see a ton of it last year because he just wasn't on the field all that much. But, I mean, the speed has always been there with Jalin Hyatt. So we'll see if that's on display starting tomorrow night against Ball State. Coming up next, we'll be joined for our first weekly visit of the season by Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. We'll look back at his team's performance against Hawaii and look ahead to Elon coming up this weekend as well. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in for National Sounds Baseball tonight at 7:05 on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds are at home at First Horizon Park, taking on the Memphis Redbirds, AAA affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrow, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrow, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. It was a big win for Vanderbilt over the weekend, as they open up the season with a statement with Hawaii, 63-10, the final score against Hawaii. They'll take on Elon coming up this Saturday at First Bank Stadium as well. To help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. Clark, how's it going? What's going on?
Well, just, morning meetings here, morning practice, getting ready for Elon, but everything's good. How are y'all doing?
We are great. Appreciate you making time for us. So, Clark, obviously a big, big win for you guys over the weekend against Hawaii. I'm just curious from your standpoint, you know, you look at the final score and people may think that, Wow, easy win for Vanderbilt, but it did start off that way in that game. What did you learn about your team and maybe their ability to overcome adversity and how much progress they've made in that part of the game on Saturday?
Well, I think the first thing is, you know, we've had one exposure this season, and so it's just like heading into the game, you feel like it's the entire season because of the buildup, and now, you know, you have this. Kind of an example of you're a sample size of one game. So what I learned in the game was that we are like tethered to a belief, and it's a belief in what we're capable of. You know, we didn't flinch early when we took on the adversity. I think that's certainly progress. I think that's reflective of that belief. And then, you know, we were able to settle in and really play to an identity. I thought it was a physical identity. I thought we played really hard. It was fun to watch. A lot of energy on the sideline, on the field, and we took care of business. But, you know, with a sample size of one game, I think we're still learning about this team. You know, we have to show an ability to refocus here this week and come out and replicate that performance. And obviously, no one game is like another, so there are going to be other things that come up, other forms of adversity, that we're going to have to kind of stare down and work our way through. But I thought it was a good start and excited to build upon it.
Clark, you guys obviously had extra time out there in preparation and played extremely well. I know sometimes teams have had problems the week after a game at Hawaii as well. How much of a transition is that for your team just to come back here, time change, huge travel, and now gearing up for another game?
Well, it starts at home. It's been a tough transition for my family. It's like 11:30 at night. My kids are running around upstairs. No, it's the same adjustment just in reverse. And I think in so many ways, and we've talked about this as a team. You know, there's so much energy is put into making that transition there, and it's almost like you play the game and you feel like you're past it. But the truth is, we played a game, we finished, we got to the airport, we flew through the night, we got in the next afternoon here, and we're dropping into not just another week of preparation, but, you know, we're in class. So there are new demands on schedules. I mean, we've kind of shifted our routines completely. And it's disruptive. Now, disruptive doesn't always have to be bad. I mean, I think it's something where if you can really dial into the healthy routines and focus on the things that are most important and make good choices, you actually grow through this kind of transition. But, you know, I think it is a challenge. And so far, so good. But, you know, we're going to need to be ready Saturday evening to put on a great show. And that, you know, we got to continually work on that through the week.
Vanderbilt football coach Clark Leon with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Clark, with Ray Davis, Rocco Griffin, Chase Gillespie, they ran the ball really well. Obviously, Mike Wright did as well on Saturday. But in the running back room, what did you make of the way they ran the football and the depth that you may have in that position as the season moves along here?
Well, we've always felt that room to be a strength for us. And I think when you throw Mike Wright in that backfield, you're talking about kind of a really dangerous set of skills. And so, you know, we were pleased. The thing that I loved about watching that group run was I felt like once we dialed into like a physical running style, we really opened the game up between the tackles. And then obviously Mike was able to get going on the perimeter. And I would throw Jaden McGowan into that mix too, because I thought he had some really nice runs on the edges in our jet sweep game. But, you know, that position needs to continue to be a strength for us. I think if we're going to reach our potential on offense, you know, we got to get our perimeter passing game going, and we have to be able to establish a run game. And obviously with each week, that's going to become more and more challenging. But I thought we had good play design. I thought we had good execution, but most importantly to me, I thought we came out with a physical attitude and, you know, we were able to get some hard charging yards on the ground.
And it looks like, Clark, like Joey Lynch has really tailored some things to Mike Wright's skill set. And just, I just really like the variety of the way you guys were running the ball. As you do, as you move forward with Mike, what is your thought just on the balance of utilizing how much of a weapon he is versus protecting him?
Well, I mean, we're gonna every game go in to win. So the balance is do whatever it takes to win, and you know, for us, I think, you know, the game obviously was in our favor in the third quarter, and we felt towards the end of that quarter that we had done enough with him offensively early on too at snap exposure. So we probably left him in a series or two just to get the game exposure for him and just keep working our systems. I think that's important. But you know, we're gonna, every game we go into, it's gonna be it's about winning the game. It's about creating the distance that we feel comfortable with. But until we get that distance, he's a go. And you know, Mike's done a lot in the off season physically to develop, and you know, we have the confidence that he'll be healthy. And you know, if whatever reason we need, just like any position, you know, if we need to go down the depth chart, we got guys that are going to be ready to play, and we'll plug and play and keep rolling.
Clark, what stands out to you about Elon coming up on Saturday night, and how excited are you and your players to open things up at home this Saturday?
Well, I'll start with just opening up at home. I mean, to be back home is exciting, but obviously with the naming rights, First Bank Stadium, I think what a special moment for the program, and I think just another sign of momentum building here. You know, we got new turf down, which we're excited about too, and that's going to be something that you know, I think will present well to everyone who's going to be watching on TV. We're, you know, excited about the fact that we've got the top 100 players being honored here and celebrating 100 years Dudley Field. And you know, it's just, there's just a lot around this. And then obviously coming off a win, you know, you feel the energy and excitement around kind of what we're building. So there's no doubt that we're going to be amped up to play. You know, now you're going to talk about an opponent in Elon that will present different challenges than Hawaii did. This is a team that is going to be way more connected, and that's no fault of Hawaii's. They had, you know, 52 new players and a new coaching staff, and there were a lot of moving parts. We knew that they were going to have to kind of form an identity as the game went on. Elon will be far different. They have way more returning snaps. They have experience. They have entrenched systems, and so we're gonna play against a united force. And we know very well what happens when, you know, we don't come out and play to our highest level. We know that if we don't come out and represent our program the way we know we can represent it, you know, we leave things in the balance and leave things a chance, and we'll have, you know, a great challenge on Saturday. And so this week for us is about obviously understanding Elon's tactics, but really more dialing into our identity and our personality and making sure that shines on Saturday.
Clark, I want to ask you about the defensive side of the ball. Going back to the spring, you know, you showed me some film of 2021 spring versus 2022, and the vast difference was pretty striking to see, you know, some of those cut-ups. And I thought about that as I watched just the overall defense play. And, you know, thinking back to the opener last year and just the way that defense played in the opener, I'm wondering individually, you know, Anthony Orji comes to mind, Max Worship, and I know a lot of guys played well in this game, B.J. Anderson, how much individual growth and improvement have you seen from some of these guys on your defense?
Dramatic. I mean, dramatic growth. And that, you know, I don't want to sensationalize either. You know, I mean, I think we feel like, and we talk about this as a program all the time, it's program evolution is dependent upon individual evolution. So if we're not making the improvements on an individual level, then, you know, we're not going to have a chance to move the program forward as a whole. And so, you know, each of these guys has grown, and this kind of dials into that idea, the concept that we use of the Vanderbilt Football Warrior. We talk about, you know, mind, body, spirit, skill, and bond. Those five areas is where we focus on development with each individual. And I think you see that surface you know, again, mentally the resilience there early to battle through a tough first drive. Physically, we're bigger, faster, stronger. I think that showed up on Saturday. You know, the spirit, the enthusiasm that we play with, the effort that we play with, I believe, to be a, you know, again, was tangible Saturday. The skills, the technical, tactical, fundamental, you know, showed up. And then the interconnectedness was again, something that I felt in performance. And so as you see advancement in those areas within the individual, you start to see a team that connects at a higher level and plays present themselves. And so, you know, particularly on the fumble returns for touchdowns, what you had was 11 guys playing to an identity, running to the ball, playing with effort, and making things happen. And, you know, we're not going to have, you know, 14 points on defense every game, but when you're playing that way, you unlock the potential for those plays to occur. And now, you know, again, it's about, you know, are we able to replicate that? Are we able to take that formula and apply it forward? You know, what I've seen in preparation through fall camp and in practice and training, you know, tells me that this is a foundational identity. But again, to do it over and over and over again becomes the challenge of consistency.
Well, Clark, it was a lot of fun to watch on Saturday night. Looking forward to this Saturday against Elon as well. And looking forward to you joining us every Wednesday here on the show. Thanks so much for making time for us this morning.
Awesome, guys. Great to be with you. Y'all take care.
Absolutely. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head coach, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrow. Looking forward to that next as well. This is Robbie and Rexrow at 102.5, 106.3, the game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Can you take me higher to a place where blind men see?
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Michelle Knezovic, Scott Stapp here with you. The beautiful sounds of Creed bringing us back in here today. Always one of my favorite parts of the show, Joe Rexrode.
Two guys, I think, who live in Nashville, John Oates could kick stocks.
Nailed it.
Drop the mic. John Oates could kick the crap out of Scott Stapp.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. Now, Dono's pretty rocked up.
So is Scott Stapp.
All I know is I'll take the deepest, deep cut of Hall & Oates, like a studio outtake where they're breaking instruments and, you know, like Daryl Hall's all – he's sick and he's off key. And I'll take that.
You're
like,
so
on a loop over the greatest live performance in Creed history.
So okay. Disrespectful.
What did Creed ever do to you?
I know. It's just.
They made me listen to their music.
It's ridiculous.
Also, you took your headphones off to show it to the Zoom, but we're on this camera.
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever. I'm a mess, okay?
Joe, with that in mind, I turn things over to you for your Rex rant today.
So, thanks. I was going to rant today about food because I do have a. I will be doing this at the end of every month. And I sent you guys a picture for verification.
Yeah.
I'm doing my update on my effort to drop 50, buy 50. I'm really sorry about this picture with my feet in it on the scale. It's really kind of unsettling shot there, isn't it? Sorry. But 255 a month ago, today 235.5.
Nicely done, Joe Rexrode.
19 and a half. Now, thank you. Now, again, 10 were screaming to get off the boat. It was like, just please stop just, you know, shoveling every chip and cookie in your mouth like every 5 minutes and maybe walk, you know, the dogs. So 10 we're begging to get off, but I've been pretty disciplined and again, feeling better. That's the whole point, right? Is not having to take acid reduction pills to go to bed. And I haven't done that in a while. So thank you. I was going to rant about food and how hard it is, but actually I want to thank you guys on the text line for pissing me off today. I'm going to switch to that. Although I can't. Okay, so Jared in Spring Hill kind of redeemed himself, but I just feel this coming, and it's one of those things like, do you preemptively just jump all over this, or is it time to just promise that every time this comes up, I'm going to yell at you?
I think you're going to preemptively jump all over it.
Do we keep getting mad every time? Yeah, I don't know. It's probably going to be hard to avoid it at times. So Jared in Spring Hill said, you know, on the text line, driven by WilsonCahayo.com, quote, Tannehill can have just as bad of a game as Malik can. And then I said something about that, and he said, no idea. We haven't seen Tannehill play all preseason. We run the rock. It isn't that difficult to operate. To which I replied, Ryan Tannehill has thrown for more than 10,000 yards with 76 touchdowns and 27 picks in less than 3 full seasons with the Titans. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
Guys, let's just drop the Malik Willis thing for this season. It's an interesting story, and it's going to be something that's really interesting in 2023. And I mean, we don't know a lot of what the 2023 thing will be is Tannehill and what he does this year.
Yeah.
So I had to do a thing for The Athletic about rookie QBs. We had a little roundtable, and I was asked about Malik Willis starting in 2023, and I said at this point, like, it's hard to predict that based on where he is. But certainly Tannehill, like the Titans could decide to move on from Tannehill after this year. And even if that's the case, as I wrote, you know, there could be a different quarterback brought in. Like, I don't know what's going to happen with Malik Willis, but if you guys think that, like, it's even close at all, like Willis could come in. So Wes in Clarksville asked this. If Malik started the playoff game against the Bengals, would we have won? And my answer to him was, are you serious? He hasn't told me if he's serious or not yet.
I think he may be being a troll. Maybe. I don't know. I kind of hope not, though. I hope he's serious.
Now I got to look at Wes's history, too. You know. Guys, I mean, Tannehill was awful in the playoff game. Like, right now, the difference in those two, like, I'm trying to think of a good analogy for it. You know, Malik Willis has a lot to offer. He could get there someday. At no point this season will there ever be a decision made. Ryan's not playing well, put in Malik. It will not happen. It should not happen. It's totally different. And I don't know what else to say about it. There's Tannehill is a starting, you know, good starting NFL quarterback. Malik Willis, let's think about some of the guys. Let's think about Peyton Manning with his 31 picks as a rookie. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, would he have been great right away as a rookie? Yeah, I don't know, but he had the benefit of sitting. Steve McNair had the benefit of sitting 2 years. And I understand that there are rookies who come out and perform. But Malik Willis was never in that position for so many different reasons. Primarily the offense and the competition for him. But just like there's just a lot of stuff that has had to be broken down and built back up and all this stuff. Lots of ability, great approach. It's going to be very interesting. At no point this year, if he's on the field for an extended period of time, because Ryan Tannehill's hurt. That's it. So, like, can we just get past this? Well, or can we just, I guess, come up with, you know, rants off that? I guess. I can thank you.
Well, Dennis on the text line says, if we see Willis start a game this season, it means things have gone horribly wrong. Why would anyone be hoping for this? It's lunacy. It's from Dennis on the text line.
And so I understand Titans fans who are out on Tannehill, I get it. But the discussion with Tannehill is, can you get one of those top guys? Okay? People are acting like Malik Willis went number 3 overall in the draft. He went in the 3rd round. Like, you got to keep that in mind, too. There are reasons.
Oh, and he also made a ton of mistakes in the preseason, which is not – it's not bad. Like, I think Trevor Maddich said it very well yesterday with Stillman and company. You know, the baseline of his performance was kind of that first game against Baltimore. – He got better against Tampa.
Yeah.
I thought he got significantly better against Arizona. So,
agree.
He's making some improvement. It's great. There's still, like, he's not a he's not close to a winning NFL quarterback right now. Not close.
Not close. And no one expected him to be close, or no one should have expected him to be close, but I think some people did, and you just have to just – you've got to drop it. And I don't know what's going to happen with Tannehill this year. I think he's going to play well. I think if he gets protection and good play from his receivers, he's probably going to have a good bounce-back year, and he's a top half of the NFL quarterback, which is not easy to get. If either Willis, Woodside, or anybody else that the Titans could pick up out there were starting instead of Tannehill, it would be way different and way worse.
Yeah, and look, I think the hope as you move forward here with Willis, like to me the hope for him this year is that at some point he's ready, if he has to go finish a game, like you can get through the end of the game with him. Like he's ready to be a competent number two. That's my hope for him by the end of the year. And I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but that's my hope at him for him by the end of the year. The idea of him being like ready to push or challenge Tannehill, it doesn't even enter my mind this year. I'm hoping, if you're a Titans fan, that that's the case next year, like that he's ready to make a push then. It may not be the case next year either. So
no, there's no guarantee.
This is a process with Malik Willis. There's a lot to like about him. I love his arm. I love his demeanor. I love his ability to run the ball. Like there's a whole lot that I like about Malik Willis. There's a long way to go before he's ready to play winning football.
All right, this unnamed texter. First of all, funny one. Why do you hate Jared's Joe? But now comes with Malik was a much better college QB than Tannehill. Is that right?
I don't know.
Well, Malik Willis left Auburn to go to Liberty.
Yeah.
And, hey, Hugh Freeze is there, and it's great. You know, he made some big plays at Liberty. Tannehill was a top 10 pick out of Texas A&M, right?
He was. He also started as a receiver.
So. Yes. Yeah. Yes, he did. But, you know, he had a monster last year at Texas A&M, which got him in the top 10 of the draft. So I would – and you may be trolling me, and I get that.
I hope you are.
And Wes may be too. But, hey, thanks for the rant.
I encourage all the trolling of Rex Row that we can get on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
And most of the people responding on the text line now are saying the same thing. Like, no, come on. Like, it's not – this is not reality. So let's join reality together.
This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on Robbie and Rexroad. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com and Outkick 360 as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.